Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galati. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm getting there. I'm on the road to recovery. I've been sick. As I mentioned to you earlier, I'm a miserable patient. No one would want to be around me, which is fine. As I told you earlier, I'm self-aware.
That's the important thing. I'm the same way. I'm sure I'm a big pain in the neck when I'm sick too. So I what do they call it? Man flu or something?
Yes, we are not very tolerant of not feeling well. And you know what? I'm not even like that sick. Like I have my brother, he's been dealing with it since before Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And you know, and he was like, he wasn't even picking up calls. He was in bed the whole time. Not nearly that bad. But you know what? On the miserable measuring stick, I'm at the peak. So anyway, I think the worst of it's over. I'm on my road to recovery, at least for now. So we've got lots to talk about, Dustin. Let's get right to it. Let's start with Big Ten Conference Championship game. Your Big Ten Conference champion, Indiana Hoosiers. You know what? You've been saying all year, maybe Ohio State isn't the best team in the country. Maybe it's Indiana. So maybe we should start listening to Dustin.
Maybe, yeah, that's my takeaway. Is that I am always right. I had a feeling. So I was in a text. This is kind of funny. I was in a text group and somebody asked, I had said all week, I think Indiana's going to win this game. I think the fact that it's in a dome and a climate control, after the way I saw Indiana throw the ball against Purdue outdoors, I thought being in a indoor climate, controlled environment was really going to help Indiana. And I sent a message to the group, which contains two Indiana fans. And I said, I think Indiana is going to win this 21-17. And the response was, Ohio State's pretty good. If we hold them to 17 points, just give us the national championship. Well, they held them to 10 points. So, but here's the interesting part, Jim. This is going to sound weird. I think Indiana is very good. They deserve the number one ranking. Ohio State should have won that game. Why? I don't know. They are two runs on third and one away from probably winning that game 24-13. I don't understand those play calls in those situations.
Well, here's we've been patting you on the back. Now I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit. We do a weekly show where we pick winners. I picked Indiana to win this game, at least against the spread. Yes. So I picked Indiana. I still think Ohio State is the best team in the country. I believe if Indiana somewhere along the line plays Ohio State, and I guess it would happen since they're seeded 1-2, it would have to be in the national championship game. My early prediction is Ohio State sticks it to them and wins maybe double digits. Okay. I believe that to be the case. It's almost like Ohio State needs to be slapped around a little bit before they wake up. We saw it a year ago against Michigan. To me, there was that same kind of feeling where you wondered what Ohio State was doing on offense. As you pointed out, you know, they have those 4th-and-1, and my goodness, don't miss a 29-yard field goal.
Yeah, that's my biggest issue that the entire game, first of all, Jim, let me point this out too. I've got a lot of thoughts on this. Holding was apparently optional on both sides. Did you notice that everybody was getting held the entire game? I was just like, wow, okay, we're just letting them play.
Well, by the way, let me interrupt you for a second. Let me get this straight. Are you questioning the Big Ten officials?
You know what? I think I'm going to. Yes.
Okay. Keep going. I don't want to discourage you.
That was a theme throughout the game where they just did not call holding. It was incredible. I don't know if I'm sure I've seen games like that before. I don't know if I've ever seen it as egregious on both sides. I mean, it did equal out, but I'm like, wow, they're just really not going to call holding in this game. Ohio State had the ball. I don't remember the specific yard line. They had it 3rd and 1 twice on separate possessions. The first time they knew they were going to go for it on 4th down if they didn't get it. On 3rd and 1, they run some sort of outplay with one wide receiver, and Jeremiah Smith is double teamed. And then they come up short on 4th. After the review, they come up short on 4th down. Why, if you know you're going for it on 3rd down, why would you not run it twice in a row and give yourself 2 plays to pick up 1 yard? Ohio State should be able to pick up 2 plays on, or 1 yard on 2 plays. And then you do the same thing. You go, I don't remember what the play call was. I think it was a rollout pass for Julian Sain on 3rd and 1. Again, nothing. And then you rely on your field goal kicker who misses the 29-yarder. He was on the right hash mark and somehow missed it wide left. I don't know how that's possible, but it happened. I legitimately believe, as much as I said I thought Indiana was going to win this game, and they did, so credit me, I walked away thinking Ohio State, I thought, was the better team. They just had the 2 boneheaded play calls that cost them 14 points.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and I always question that on the play calling. And then I also realized, Dustin, on those play calls, if they work, everyone gets patted on the back for the great call. Mm-hmm. I get that. But to me, you're Ohio freaking State.
Yeah.
And if you can't get 1 yard on 2 snaps from your offensive line just getting a little bit of push, there's something wrong. And yeah, you know what? Just go get the first down. And it's a case of outsmarting themselves.
I agree, because the thing was, is they moved the ball. I don't know if it was, I don't want to say seamlessly, but methodically. How about they were controlling the game on those 2 possessions, and then just, you know what? I can't say the real word I want to say, but just let's mess around here and take ourselves out of it. I don't know. I think major credit to Indiana. They did what they had to do. They played the smarter football game. I still think they're really, really good. I still think they have a legitimate chance to win a national championship. And we'll talk about this a little bit later. I think if I'm IU, I don't like the draw that I got. But that's a conversation we'll have later. But I thought after this game, I would walk away saying Indiana won, and then Indiana is the best team in the country. And I don't know that I feel as confident about that second part as I did if they would have won how I expected them to win.
I'm with you on this. I've been saying Ohio State's the best team in the country for a while, and I still believe that they are. And even with that in my head, I was not surprised Indiana won. As I said, I thought this was the game that probably meant more to them. Now, I'm sure Ohio State's not saying, oh, well, we'll just mail it in. We really don't care about the Big Ten championship. They do. But I think this game meant more to Indiana, not just for the Big Ten championship, but for credibility's sake. They finally, I think everyone, including myself, will not say, gee, are they really legit? You know what, Dustin? They are. They may not have proved they're better than Ohio State, but they certainly proved they're legit.
Yeah, and they can compete with anybody. They can beat anybody in the country. I think you're right. Like, this is, they'd gone 80 years without winning a Big Ten championship. It's a long time. And I think in this new era, it's even more impressive, because you not only are you having to compete with Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and you have to be in the top 2, you throw Oregon and USC into the mix. There's a lot of travel. Like, it's even more difficult to win a Big Ten title. So I think for them to do that, I do agree with your point. There was nothing really to gain or to lose in this game. However the game turned out, as long as one of the teams didn't get blown out, they were going to end the season 1-2. And so there was really nothing to gain, nothing to lose. And Ohio State can always fall back on, we weren't even in the Big Ten championship game last year. We lost to Michigan last year, and we still won the national title. So they'll certainly have some things to fix. They still earned a bye. And I think that you're correct, and this was the game that they probably, okay, now let's go show the world why we're the best team in the country.
All right. And we're going to talk a bit about Penn State's new head coach, Matt Campbell. But in the mix for the Penn State job was Brian Hartline. So I think Penn State fans are paying attention to him. What's amazing to me is how quick Ohio State fans turned on him. One game where they scored 10 points, they can't get him out of town fast enough.
Yeah, well, I think the sentiment I heard was basically if they probably would have been frustrated no matter what, but the thought was he is 1 foot out the door already, so why are you allowing him to play call plays? I don't necessarily disagree with that. But Ryan Day knows better if they're going to be better with Brian Hartline or without it. I don't know, but that may be a decision that Ryan Day has to make in the next few days. Do we trust who we have as a backup play caller? Do I trust myself as a play caller? I would like to know how much Brian Hartline actually does in terms of the play calling. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting argument, but you're going to always point the finger no matter what in a loss, especially if you're Ohio State.
Well, it's a fascinating discussion, you know, how involved is he's obviously the offensive coordinator, but I think the bigger question is what is the involvement of Ryan Day? Does Ryan Day just step back and say, okay, Brian, do whatever you want? I suspect he's in those meetings. You know, the scripted plays gets Ryan Day's approval, how they're going to run those third and one plays. Hey, look, here's the list of third and one plays. Ryan Day had to bless it. I've got to assume that. So, and during the game itself, if he wants to, he could turn to Brian Hartline and just say, run the stinking ball twice and get us 1 yard.
Right. Yeah, and I'm surprised he didn't do it, especially on that second time they had it in the red zone. The first one, maybe you take a shot, you think you have a really good play that you can beat him. Fine, whatever. But the second time, that made no sense to me after you just saw that it failed.
All right, Dustin, that is it for quarter number one. As you mentioned, we are going to talk about the playoffs, the seeding, the controversy with the picks. But also, I want to get your take. Penn State has a new head football coach. I want to ask Dustin, did they get it right? We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. Dustin, I'll ask you straight out. Did Penn State get it right? Matt Campbell, former Iowa State coach, now Penn State head football coach.
Here's the Hem Hall answer. I can't give you a direct answer on this. I don't know. So on its face, I say no. My initial thought was this is not the best situation hire for Penn State. The reason I say that is because he's done fine in the Big 12. He hasn't been outstanding. They've had a lot of 8-5, 7-6 type of years. Yeah, they had the 1-11-3 season last year. Never won the Big 12. Has had some seasons where they start off 5-0, 6-0, and then things kind of flounder. Obviously, he's not playing with the same level of talent that you can get at Penn State. He has ties to Ohio, and I think, he's from Pitt, not from
Pittsburgh. He played at Pitt for, or he attended Pitt at least for a year.
So there are some, maybe some ties there. Maybe he knows how to recruit that area. I'm not up to date on my Iowa State football recruiting for good reason. So I don't know in terms of it, if he's gone to Pennsylvania and gotten some kids there. But there is probably some knowledge there. I don't think that, I guess I'll put it this way, Jim. I don't think this is a bad hire. I just don't know if you fire James Franklin because he can't win the big game if you hire Matt Campbell. I think there's plenty of examples where Matt Campbell has lost the big game or loses to some games he shouldn't down the road. It's just, to me, very interesting. But the one caveat I throw out there is how many times have you and I or, you know, whoever looked at a hire and said, that's a slam dunk. And then it falls apart. So that's why I say when I heard the name, I was like, I don't know if Penn State's going to be happy with this. I don't know if it's going to work out because I think there's a lot of questions out there. But at the same time, you got to think there are a lot of people we think are going to, you know, hit Luke Fickell, a great example at Wisconsin, who we thought were going to hit it out of the park. And he is limping to save his job right now.
Yeah. These hires, you never get the answer unless you're, and not even 1 year in. I remember Charlie Weiss' first year at Notre Dame looked like a big win there. Well, how did that turn out? And for those of you who don't remember Charlie Weiss, go look it up. Anyway, what you have here, and I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth, an expression that you use, Dustin, with they posted his record against top 10, top 25, and I don't think anyone, unless you're Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, has a great record against top 10 teams. That's how they became top 10 teams. They win all their games. But his record is actually much better than James Franklin's was. Now, there's a lot of context there. He could play a top 10 team that's ranked 9th or 10th, where Penn State is playing Ohio State, who's ranked 1 or 2. So, and I've always been a bit reluctant to use that big game measurement. Mm-hmm. It's in college football, especially because, and Ohio State is the best example. Penn State has to play them every year. James Franklin was like 1-11 against Ohio State. But if you look at the amount of talent that Ryan Day and Ohio State has had in those games, it's not even close for Penn State, not even close. And I think that's how you also have to judge Matt Campbell with Iowa State, who really does not get, even within the Big 12, the top talent. And I'll go to something, you know, could you have said that about Kurt Cignetti? Well, you know, James Madison, do you say, gee, he won all the time? Or do you say, well, it's James Madison. So who did he ever beat when he was at James Madison? Right, Dustin?
Right, exactly. No, that's a perfect example. And like in terms of the talent, the thing that's going to be interesting to me is you have to recruit high-end talent. And I just, this is not against Matt Campbell. I just don't know. Can he coach those guys? Because, and the example I always use is Mark D'Antonio, because after they got beat by Michigan State in 2015 in the playoff, he had a mindset like, we got to go out and get better talent. And they had two of their best recruiting classes. I think they were both top 10 classes in back-to-back years, and he could not coach them. Those teams went like 7-6, 7-6, and I think they had one 10-win year in there, but they got obliterated in any big game they played. So that's I think that's my concern. It's not. I think Matt Campbell's a very good football coach. I think he knows his X's and O's. And look, maybe he could find a way to pull a Kurt Cignetti where those IU guys aren't 4- and 5-star recruits. Can you develop some of those? I mean, I think you still have to get a 5-star here and there, but can you develop some of those guys and, you know, work them into a system that you can be successful in some of those games against some of those higher profile teams? To me, there's just a lot of uncertainty around it.
Well, there's also, Dustin, I've always been reluctant through this NIL period to say, oh, colleges are, it's just now like professional football. It's like the NFL. I'm beginning to change my tune because it really is. And if you look, it's roster management, and how do you use your money? So you look at Texas Tech. They use their resources really well. So to me, it's Matt Campbell has shown he can coach up talent. He could coach what he has, those three stars, beyond that three-star status. The question is, can Penn State get the talent? And the fact is, it's not now all about recruiting. It's all about, are you willing to spend? You and I are big baseball fans. You know, the Mets, the Braves now with their new stadium are spending more money, your team. It makes a there's a reason why the Dodgers are in the World Series all the time. And it appears that Penn State is committing the money. Now, can they do the right scouting, spend the money correctly? I think will be the biggest variable for Matt Campbell.
I'm going to throw out another variable for you here. I have long said that I don't know that any quarterback got better under James Franklin. I think that there were some gamers. I think Trace McSorley was a gamer. I think, I now have forgotten.
Sean
Clifford. Yes. Thank you. Sean Clifford, Drew Aller. I think those were all good quarterbacks. I don't know how much they improved. Matt Campbell has coached Rocco Becht. He's coached Brock Purdy. And I know that those names aren't probably super attractive, but I think that you can see that their progression throughout their time at Iowa State and then with Purdy into the NFL. Like, I think there is something to that. And Penn State has wanted a really good quarterback for a really long time. So I do think Matt Campbell can coach the quarterback position or have people on his staff who can coach the quarterback position very well. And so I think that that's going to be – I think that's an underrated thing that he can do and that he can bring to Penn State. And I'm not saying the next guy is going to be the next Fernando Mendoza or Julian Sain or Justin Fields or your laundry list of great quarterbacks that played in the Big Ten. But can you be in that top five? And I think if you're in that top five, you give yourself a chance to compete with the best teams in the conference.
What you also then have is a situation where Matt Campbell can play in that neighborhood with the top quarterbacks. Short term, the question is, Rocco Becht has eligibility left. Ethan Grunkmeyer, there are those of us who were impressed with him, especially over these last couple games. And I've read this, don't know if it's true, but there are reports that Iowa State had been interested in Grunkmeyer. I believe even Grunkmeyer had visited Iowa State. So there might be some prior connection between the two of them. That will be one of the first really fascinating questions. What's he going to do for quarterback?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it probably depends on what Rocco decides, right? Like if he goes into the pros, cause I've seen where he's considered now when you talk NFL draft, a top 25 quarterback is not great, right? Like there's a lot of, you can be a top 25 quarterback and be really good at the college level, but are you NFL draft worthy? And that's the question. So I don't know. That is a fascinating aspect. One that I hadn't really thought of. I actually thought he was out of eligibility, but it makes it even more interesting, doesn't it? And how much of his Iowa State roster does he think he can bring with him? There's going to be a lot of variables in here that make that first year at Penn State interesting, I think.
It is. And I'm sure he's going to bring at least a couple. How many? Who knows? And I had this discussion with someone earlier in the week, you know, position by position, like offensive linemen, you can never have enough of them. It's right. Like starting pitching, Dustin. You can never have enough. And pick defensive linemen, linebackers, DBs, wide receivers. But there's a couple positions where you only have one guy. Quarterback being one of them. Even, you know, I saw somewhere where there was discussions of Iowa State had multiple running backs who might follow them. Penn State is losing their two top running backs, of course, but they had a couple young guys who showed some promise. So again, a lot of this is going to be about roster management, at least for that first year.
Yeah, it always, I mean, every coach is going to have to deal with that too. So that's not going to be new to Matt Campbell, but I mean, it's going to be interesting. You got to get, now the one thing that they don't really have to worry about is a recruiting class, because dear God, what do they have, four players that are still committed in that class? Two? I yes. thought it was, wow, they dropped off two from last I saw. It's crazy. No, it's going to be interesting. They're going to have to go into the transfer portal, whether or not that means they're going to bring in a lot of Iowa State guys. I don't know whether that means they're going to. And the thing that Matt Campbell's going to have to look in the mirror and tell, like, he's going to have to, he probably wants to be loyal to the guys he recruited to Iowa State. But at some point, do you say, sorry, I don't know if you're going to fit at Penn State. I don't know if, you know, and that's going to be a hard conversation and probably some hard decisions that he's going to have to make. The other thing, too, is that you got to remember Penn State has to field a team. So there's, I think you're going to have to give Matt Campbell some grace. I have said this before, because we've talked about it here at home, that Kurt Cignetti ruined college football to no fault of his own, where his instant success is automatically what people expect from their next head coach. And Matt Campbell may be the right guy for the job, but if Penn State is 6-6 this year, I don't know that that is an indicator of where the program's headed.
Dustin, when we come back, I'm going to tell you why this could be a 10-2 Penn State team next year. You ready for that?
No, I'm ready.
All right. As soon as we come back, we're going to get to that.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. And Dustin, right off the bat, I wasn't being a tease there before the end of the last segment. I'm going to get right to it. Here's how Penn State wins 10 games next season. It starts with their schedule, my friend. The best teams in the conference, just without even seeing rosters, all the changes, everything else, you got to assume Ohio State, Indiana, crazy that their name's in there, Oregon. So what do you think Penn State's record against those three teams will be next season?
0-0.
0-0. You are correct, my friend. They don't play any of them. All right. Remember, you know, the last couple of years, we looked at Illinois' schedule. We looked at Indiana's schedule. This is – it is set up for Penn State. It really is. Now, you don't – I've said that before on this show, and I've gotten abused for it. 10 wins. It's the 500 team. How are they going to win 10 games? Well, here's how – they've got to hit the portal hard, obviously. But here's the advantage they're going to have. And, again, I'll keep using the baseball analogy. They've got all of these contracts coming off the books.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Katron Allen, Denai Dennis Sutton. They're all off the books, Dustin. Oh, how about all the money you got to pay those incoming freshmen now? No, they don't. What does that mean? It means they got a pocket full of money burning a hole. That is going to be their advantage, where they'll be able to outbid people for players because of those things. Obviously, you know, you'd rather, if I had my choice, yeah, I think they'd love to have Katron Allen back for another year and pay him. But the advantage of not having him is that's a big contract that comes off the books.
Yeah, I mean, and that opens up, you know, your salary cap, so to speak. And so you can go out and spend and get what you need. And so that is advantageous. Again, I would not get high. This is me. I don't know how high my expectations would be, despite what you said, everything that you said. I think it's just also very difficult to build a team in 1 year, whether you use the transfer portal or not. Now, if he brings a ton of his guys from Iowa State, then it might be a completely different story. But I think that the opportunity is there. We'll see. He's learning all this on the fly too. And how much better of a recruiter, I think what we're going to find out is how much better of a recruiter can Matt Campbell be now that he's got a big program backing him. Cause Iowa State is not going to be an attractive place for a lot of people to want to play college football. Penn State is, and it's, you know, he's going to have to compete with James Franklin now, in, you know, that DMV area. And so that's going to be interesting, but I mean, we're going to learn a lot about Matt Campbell. He's got a month to kind of get his bearings, and then the transfer portal opens. And you and I both know that there's a lot of conversations being had and a lot of, film being studied. Who's going to be a fit? Who's not going to be a fit? They probably know a good number of names who are going to be entering the transfer portal. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm reluctant to get on that 10-win bandwagon. Just because I think it's going to be very, such a crazy change that I'm not going to, unless it's like a complete disaster or a Kurt Cignetti situation, I don't know that I'm reading too much into that first year of Matt Campbell.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you get a chance, take a good look at that Penn State 2026 schedule and ask yourself this question as you go through it. Ask yourself right now, who would be favored in those games? I see Penn State, if you had to do it now, I'd probably make them a favorite in 9 out of the 12 games.
I'm sure that's fair, but we we saw how quickly it can derail with UCLA and Northwestern this past year. So
It can. Well, let me ask you this question, last question before we move on to the college football playoffs. First of all, did you hear the leaked meeting between Pat Kraft and some of the Penn State football players?
No, I did not hear that.
I will send you the link. It's a must listen. Got to. Okay. Got to. A lot of juicy things were said, a lot of salty language. You censored yourself earlier in this discussion. Pat Kraft did not censor himself. Okay. Let's just put it that way. He also took shots at a lot of other schools, programs, teams. It's a fun listen. But one of the topics that came up, and, you know, it was a discussion with the players also, was the distribution of NIL money. Because when Pat Kraft pointed out, hey, this is a pretty high payroll we have here, guys. You're among, you know, the top teams in the country payroll-wise. One of the things that was brought up was Penn State, and one of the players said this, how accurate it is, I don't know, but the idea is, gee, there's 105 players here who are getting money, as opposed to saying we're going to give the high-end talent most of the money. So it kind of leads to a strategy of how do you distribute that money, Dustin, and what's the best way if you're a GM of a college football team?
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer to that. I have no idea how you would distribute that. I would guess, and I don't know, that there's some sort of baseline where seniors get X amount, juniors get X amount, sophomores get X, and then freshmen. But are there incentives? Are there, is there a starting bonus or, you know, things like that? I don't know how that all works out. And then the other thing is they can still make NIL money. So are those other, you know, the starters, the quarterback, the star wide receiver, the running backs, they're probably getting more opportunities in NIL than obviously the redshirt freshman who never plays. So there's a lot of different dynamics there that, it especially like college basketball and some of these other sports, I feel like it's easier because you're only dealing with 15 players.
Right.
You could probably distribute it a little bit more equally, or players are probably a little bit more understanding of who makes what and why. But I can tell you right now, I'm glad I would never have to be a general manager in college football.
Yeah, it's not an easy task, and it's not an easy question. And it's one of those where, you know, if you're at the end of the bench, you're thinking, well, there should be more of an equal distribution. And if you're a star, you're thinking that's where the money should go.
Well, and the other part, too, is I think when you get to the NFL, probably, I mean, maybe not everybody, but there seems to be an understanding, and this is in every sport, of kind of what your worth is. And so, you know, going into negotiations, kind of maybe where you think you're going to fall in terms of what your contract is going to be and things like that. In college football, all these kids were like, you know, the best in their area. And, you know, best at their school, best. So they think they still probably think they're the best and deserving of X amount of dollars. I don't know how many are just like, no, I'll just take this free $20,000, you know, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
And move on with it. There's probably a lot of, but I don't know. That's not something that would be a lot of fun. I can't imagine that if the one thing that's been interesting, this is not going to be specific to Penn State, is if I'm a player who is returning, and let's say I'm Catron Allen and I'm coming back, just to throw out a name, and I get $1 million. And then you go out to get a portal quarterback. Let's say Fernando Mendoza enters the portal. We're going to offer him $2 million. Well, damn it, I stayed, and I'm a pretty good player too, but you value him more than you value me. So there's a lot of different dynamics that I don't understand. And again, I'm very glad I don't have
Well, in the example you give, though, just like in the NFL, the quarterbacks are worth a lot more than any other position. And, you know, Catron Allen had a monster season this year prior to the season starting, where Nick Singleton was probably the bigger name. That would have been the discussion, you know, Nick Singleton versus an incoming quarterback. But, you know, someone could rightfully say, hey, Nick, if you're not doing it, we still have Catron.
Yeah.
Where the quarterback, again, is that one solo position. It's why you see in the NFL, you know, what percentage of the salary throughout the team goes to the quarterback. You know, if you're Patrick Mahomes, you get, you know, Travis Kelce is the star tight end. He doesn't make near what Patrick Mahomes does.
Right.
And, you know, we've said it before, Indiana, is there another guy who you take off of Indiana's roster that it would have near the effect of taking the quarterback off the roster?
Yeah, I think the answer is no.
So there you go. That one's pretty easy. I think where the discussion comes in is, here's a freshman who comes in ready to play, and he's making less than that senior who's on the 2D but is a rotational player. Yeah. You know, and I think that's where the discussion comes in. And at Penn State, there's been, in fact, in this meeting, it was brought up as an example, you know, a freshman wide receiver who apparently lights it up at practice. And, you know, they talk about him a lot. James Franklin didn't play him very much. All of a sudden, Terry Smith is playing him, though. And I think that's where, the players themselves, I think we got to give them credit for understanding those things better than we think they do.
I'm not convinced, Jim. I mean, you're probably correct. I'm sure there's more of an education process, but there's also a lot of people who I feel like, and maybe it's because they will just get offered more money if they enter the transfer portal and go elsewhere, even if they're not, you know, to us, there might not be a player, whether it's on Penn State or Purdue roster, that you think, yeah, that guy's worth that money, but maybe to somebody else he is worth it. I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic, but I mean, to the overall point, yeah, Matt Campbell's going to have a lot to work with, both in terms of money and on the recruiting front and in the transfer portal, and he's going to have to utilize both. Now, probably not so much the recruiting, obviously, now, but he's going to have to hit the portal hard and then try to establish that pipeline in terms of recruiting, because I still think that that's where you want to have a majority of your success and be able to develop that talent, but you've got to be able to do well in the portal too.
Well, I think the first hire that Matt Campbell made, and it was probably a discussion when he took the job, Terry Smith is coming back, the interim coach. That's important towards retention of the current talent. That's that. And of course, the portal itself. All right. We will get to the playoffs when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. As promised, Dustin, we're going to talk some college football playoffs. Very simple question to start. Did the committee get it right?
It's very simple, Jim. Here's the thing. You could make a case that Alabama didn't deserve to be in. You can make the case that BYU should have been in. You could say Virginia. You could say Notre Dame. You could say a couple different schools in there. I don't know that there's 12 teams worthy of getting in the playoff this year. So that to me, I don't know. Is there a team that you say should not have gotten in and then you replace them and you feel confident that they should have gotten in? That's where I kind of start the conversation.
It's funny. I'm going to relate this to the Penn State coaching search. I think they did fine in the end with what they got. Mm-hmm. The process to get there, though, not good at all.
Correct.
And I think we could say the same thing about these playoffs and or the selections. Is James Madison or Tulane, are either one of them one of the 12 best teams in the country?
Probably not.
Are you okay, though, with a group of five or group of six team making the playoffs?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I am because I think that levels – I have never been a fan of a team – like people have said in the past, like college football is always about like every game matters. Well, every game mattered for five conferences. The other five conferences, it never mattered. Like they might get to the BCS, but they never had a chance to win a national championship. So I am a fan of those teams being allowed to participate and be included in the party. I don't know that they're one of the 12 best. I mean, I guess we'll find out. But I have no problem because I think over time what's going to happen, it's kind of like the 16 seed in the NCAA tournament. Dude, those schools, are they among the 64 best teams? No. Do they deserve 60, a chance?
68 best teams.
I'm sorry, 68. 68. Yes. Are they among the 68 best? No. But we've seen two 16 teams after X amount of years. I think it was like 25, 30. Finally beat number one seed twice. So that's why I have no problem with it, because over time I think that the group of five teams will at some point, not every year, but at some point they're going to have some seasons where maybe they are one of the five best teams in the country and they will make a decent run to the, you know, Final Four, championship, whatever it might be.
Some of these things in the process, Dustin, I feel were like self-inflicted problems. The ACC with their tiebreaker system, it's so wrong. That's what allowed a five-loss Duke team get into the conference championship. Then the powers that be, the college football playoff folks, they kind of weasel-worded the ruling, you know, the five best conference winners. They never specified the Power Four conference winner automatically gets in. The ACC, they got what they deserved by allowing the rules to have a five-loss Duke team in the conference championship.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel bad for them at all. And if Virginia wins that game, it's a completely different story.
Of course.
So, I mean, yeah, either win that game or you're gonna reap what you sow there. The other thing, the one thing that I didn't like, and I did not I knew it was going to anger me, so I didn't watch the selection show because whatever. Alabama getting blown out, absolutely blown out by Georgia. And then the same thing happening to BYU. And the committee saying, well, you know, in that we didn't want a championship game loss to hurt Alabama too bad. You know, they were, some of those teams didn't play and Alabama had to play. So, you know, we're not going to let that negatively affect. And then to turn around and say BYU that the margin of victory was too bad. So that's why we're not going to, like, I don't care that you put Alabama in, but don't use your BS logic there and talk out of, talk out of both sides of your mouth. The process sucks. I'm just going to say that, like, have some set criteria. I always say this about college basketball. At least we know there are some controversial picks at the end, but you have RPI, you have net ranking, you've got KenPom, you've got all these different metrics. You've got, why can't you do that with football and make it public? So that way everybody knows what you're judging on. We just look at this and be like, oh, they picked a bunch of SEC teams. Again, shocking.
Yes, and it was almost like, okay, here's our makeup call, because they complained, they whined for 12 months since last year. They wanted Alabama a year ago with three losses. So this year you're going to give it to them. And it's why, like I used to joke, the four-team playoff was very simple. Undefeated, you're in. Two losses, you're out. If we have more than X number of teams with one loss, here's how we grade them. First year, if you're an SEC school, you get in. Next, if you're a Big Ten school, you get in. That's how they did it. They didn't need hours and hours of watching games. They didn't need it. Right there, I gave you the rules. Now, they have to have a new set of rules with 12 teams. So, you know, Duke, they're complaining they didn't get in, and their complaint is, well, look at our quality wins versus James Madison. Very simple. Don't lose to UConn. Very simple. So where it becomes more fascinating, and I'm glad you brought up Alabama and BYU, the wishy-washiest answer in the world. And there's a lot of competition when you're the head of this football committee.
Yeah.
Reese Davis legitimately asked, gee, if Alabama loses, will the loss in the conference championship game affect their standing? The guy gave 10 minutes of no answer at all, not even close to an answer. And this is why, because they will treat BYU differently than Alabama. But here you go. You have Alabama, you've got Miami, you've got Notre Dame, you've got BYU, you've got Vanderbilt. How did you pick Alabama and Miami, but not Notre Dame? Oh, and by the way, Miami and Notre Dame was ranked much higher, than Miami until the week where neither team played and Miami jumps Notre Dame. Yeah. And I hate Notre Dame, so I was okay with the result, Dustin.
Yeah.
Justify it for me, though.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, there's no way you can justify – you can't justify any – like, I mean, you can. You can justify who won the Big Ten SEC. You can justify, I think, even these group of five teams. But like, it just – they never made any sense as to how they were going to select these teams, especially at the bottom. I don't know. I do think it's crazy, though. Like, Notre Dame just picks up its ball and goes home. What a bunch of whiners. Like, come on, man. Like, you don't get your way, so you're going to whine about it. That's the most Notre Dame thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, and by the way, Dustin, I talked about self-inflicted wounds. Notre Dame, by being adamant about remaining an independent, go into the Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, or even go win the ACC, and you're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You chose this path, and you chose not to get have to play in a conference championship game. By the way, did you see starting next year, this can't happen to them?
No.
They'll actually get a guarantee that if they're ranked within the top 12, they have to go.
Of course they did, because it's Notre Dame. I mean, they played – look at their schedule, though. This is like Purdue, Arkansas, Boise State, NC State. They beat USC, so that's a good win. Boston College, Navy, Pitt, decent win. Syracuse, Stanford. 8 of those 10 wins are trash.
Yep.
And you lost both of the games that you had an opportunity to make a statement, and you lost to Texas A&M at home.
Yes.
Like, if you win one of those games, you're in, you don't have to worry about it. Or, as you said, join a conference, and you're probably fine.
Exactly. And you brought up the idea of criteria where you could also, hey, if Alabama had been left out, I could see that they lost 3 games. And my feeling is, should a team get really punished for losing a conference championship game? No. Ohio State losing to Indiana, of course they're going to fall behind Indiana, but you can't punish them for playing that extra game against what ultimately turned out is the number one ranked team. And as you said, they should have won. It's that close a game. Meanwhile, Alabama got their butt kicked by Georgia. So if Alabama were undefeated and lost that game, hey, you know, you can't punish them very much.
Right.
And if they lost it close, especially. But if I'm saying I've got Alabama, I got Miami, I got Notre Dame, boy, it's really close. Okay, here's the extra data point that I have with Alabama, and I'm using that as a tiebreaker. Gee, Alabama was barely lost to a Georgia team that's one of the best teams in the country. We're good. No, they didn't. They lost badly. To me, that's a data point that could be the tiebreaker and leave Alabama out. I could justify that.
Right. When you can even say, like, this is – so a lot of people say, like, you shouldn't punish them for not playing in that game. But if Alabama wins, there's no question they're in. Georgia knew they were in going into it. So that game was Alabama. If Alabama was to, like, you get an opportunity that, I mean, you got an opportunity that Miami didn't, if you view it that way. Like, right. And I know it's not how it worked out, but like everybody wants to use it as they shouldn't get, well, if you get your ass kicked, pardon my language, in the championship, it should, but I don't have a problem with them not putting BYU in, but I don't know why it's different criteria for, I mean, I do know because it's the SEC versus the Big 12. But the different criteria is what bothers me about it. And I don't know. They had an opportunity to win that game and not even be on the bubble.
Well, that's the thing, too. You know, there was discussions about Texas with their 3 losses. Gee, if we hadn't scheduled Ohio State. Well, the fact is you did. And if you had won the game, you would have gotten points for that.
Yeah.
You lost, so you got to get punished for it. The same way Georgia, Alabama. Georgia got rewarded for winning that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're seeded 3rd in the country. Had they lost, they would not have been seeded 3rd. Dustin, there's so much more to talk about with this. We'll pick it up next week. That's going to have to be the final word. Thank you, Dustin. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.